Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Major Mike Lyons, a CBS military consultant, retired Army major, and I might add, retired or former student of Colonel Jeff McCausland, joins us right now. We do our research, Mike.
Yeah, that's right. He is. He's my lifelong mentor. I was my first P when I was at West Point, and I was fortunate enough to command under him in combat. So, he's a very special person to me.
Watch what you do, Mike, because we're watching you. All right? I don't even know where to start with this. The president wants to fire the general, or at least he pushed for that last month, saying the United States is losing the war. John McCain has come out criticizing him. I think John McCain, and you don't have to respond to this, Major, but I think he's at the point in his life now where he doesn't care about the party. He doesn't care what people think. Right. He knows that his time is limited, and let's hope he all hope he gets better, but the chances for that are not likely. And now he's determined to do what he thinks is best for the country. So I don't even know where to start, Major. Let's talk about policy in Afghanistan and the other presidents that have gotten bogged down in it. How long has that war gone on now?
Well, it's the 16th year, but it's 16 one-year wars, and I think that's one of the issues about how these wars are propagated.
Explain that, if you will, Major. 16, instead of a 16-year war, 16 one-year wars.
Right. So you have a new general officer that comes in and takes over command of the situation. And in classic, you know, human form, they want to put their imprint on the situation, what's going on the ground. The guy that's currently in command there, a guy named Mick Mickelson, was at West Point when I was there. I do know him. He's one of the high integrity, right guy, all those kinds of things, well-trained, smart, off the charts. But he's asking for the same things that everybody else has been asking for, more troops. And that's the way you solve problems in this world. You just throw bodies at things. There's some things about – there's talk about sending basically mercenaries in there. The Eric Prince guy is back involved, and he wants to bring Blackwater in there. That would be a big mistake. Mm-hmm. I think we're getting to the point where you don't want to be the last casualty in Afghanistan, because I do think this president's going to likely pull everybody out.
What would be the results of – well, he first off, he says we're losing the war, and he's going to fire the general, which to me would indicate he wants to win the war, but not necessarily?
No, I'm not sure. I think he's going to be told and be shown that it's not possible to win without, you know, a larger commitment. I mean, we had 100,000 troops there at some point, and that didn't lead to any more winning than what we're seeing right now. The Afghan government can't seem to stand itself up on any level. It's so prone to these kinds of attacks, infiltration by individuals that they thought they had trusted. So it just remains, you know, a lot of it has education. I still believe that's the key. And, you know, that's going to take another generation to fix. The illiteracy rate is still 60-70%, especially outside the provinces and outside the major cities. It remains a third world country, and it's going to be that. Now, the president also brought up the point about minerals, and I totally get that, and I agree with that. Like, we're so busy focusing on bringing democracy to these countries instead of capitalism. If we had focused on bringing the kind of tools that they needed to start a country, I think that would have been a lot better off the last 15 years, but that time is gone now.
Major, you know, I mentioned the two brave men that died a couple of days ago, and every time I hear that, my heart breaks. There's a young man here that I noticed was buried in the cemetery, and the audience knows I'm talking about PFC Bates, who was 21 years old and died in Afghanistan. And for those people that have lost relatives or sons or daughters or what have you, when you talk about these two men specifically, and I'm just taking them as an example, did we kind of hang them out to dry because we didn't really have the resources that it took to win the war or to accomplish anything?
Well, I think you're going to see a lot more Vietnam analogies to Afghanistan once some time and space is separated from when we finally leave there. What have we accomplished, especially if the Taliban comes rolling back through and takes over Kabul, and you've got a situation where 1998 has been recreated, and you've got a third world country and a place where terrorists can train openly, and guys on monkey bars, all those kinds of things. That would be just criminal. I don't know what the word is. I mean, after 17 years, we're just right back to where we started. And again, you're going to hear a lot more Vietnam analogies. And again, not blaming the soldiers, but
no.
The country didn't commit to what should have been.
These two men. I'm sorry, Major, to interrupt you, but I feel passionately about these two men are as brave as anybody that died in World War II, World War One, what have you. So I saw a video or news story. They didn't show the whole video of a 5-year-old holding a gun, and he executed somebody chained to a fence. Now, I didn't see the whole video. I don't know if that was a cut-and-paste kind of thing where he really didn't. But it was a 5-year-old firing a gun at this chained prisoner and then yelling, Allahu Akbar, ISIS. Are they really training kids this young to execute people?
They are. ISIS is, especially in places where they still have strongholds, and there's pockets of resistance that still are there inside of Iraq and some places in Syria. And it's a scourge that exists in that part of the world that the leadership in these different countries don't want to address. The Middle Eastern countries, after we're about 4 or 5 years now following the Arab Spring, Saudi Arabia, their leadership is still holding on to power, clinging to it very closely. All of these countries are tinderboxes on the brink of a revolution internally if they're not careful. And, again, it gets back to education. They just haven't—they separate people out very young. They have elites, and everybody else just gets, kind of gets the scraps in those countries there.
See, and that's what led me to that question is you talk about next generation. You have ISIS bringing up a generation of 5-year-olds.
Right.
That are taught to, to use a gun, execute people without any, with impunity, without any consequences at all. And I guess I'm asking in terms of ISIS and Afghanistan, if we leave, because that's why we went there originally, right, to get Osama bin Laden, does that lead to the rise of maybe ISIS in addition to other terrorist groups there?
Well, I'm not sure about that, but it could. I think there's a difference. You got location. You have to still have a population there. The situation in Iraq and Syria was much easier to fertilize that kind of environment based on the fact that we demobilized and we took away the Iraqi army. So you had more people that were not happy with what was going on. So to create an insurgency in that environment was a lot easier, especially in Iraq. Afghanistan is a little more difficult. It's mountainous. There's not the population is not there. Now what will happen is you might have some people finally get there. It's hard to get to. Some people finally get there. They create these training environments. We have to go after them. We've got drone missiles now. We've got to go after those where we know that are training environments and kind of, make sure they don't take it beyond there if they want to, show themselves to be ready to go fight somebody. Okay, we'll bring the fight to them. We just won't be on the ground there to do it.
And Major, I know you got to go. We do too. But one final question. The president, in a transcript that was released yesterday, and this is a completely different story, but talked to the Mexican president about the pills that were in New Hampshire that carried the state for him, when in fact in a presidential election he didn't, in the primary he did. And when you talk about that and drugs from Mexico, how does that compare, and where does the opium trade in Afghanistan fit into all of this and also into their future without the United States there?
Well, the thing is that industry is not as big there collectively, given what's, the fact that the Mexicans can create so much more supply and the demand in the United States is just voracious about what it wants there. But go back to what you're saying. In Afghanistan, it just only makes a few people rich. It's not. It's more or less a localized type of drug. Some of it does hit the markets. They do have they have capability. The problem is they've just not been able to take those same fields that create poppy and make corn or create and turn another crop. The bottom line is the opium still creates more of a cash crop to a few people in Afghanistan versus other things they could be growing in that land.
And in terms of that, the United States is not. And I'm not saying they should have, because they're plenty busy. They've not done anything to stifle that. So if they haven't, really, there's no evidence to indicate that it would get bigger. Or am I wrong?
No, it won't get bigger. And it's exactly to your point. I guess we've just shown in the past that it's kind of impossible to go after supply on some level. Even though you would think that would be one thing you would at least try to do, you would at least keep the demand from out there, keep the enemy from waging war against you. And that's one way. That's really a war that's taking place. And I think, but we haven't focused on that. That would take manpower as well, chemicals. It destroys the earth. You have a lot of different things that could go, that all go with that. And that's why we chose not to do that.
Major, I could spend an hour with you. I know your time's limited because I would love to get into the leaks and everything else. And maybe next time we'll talk about that. All right.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too, sir. Have a great weekend yourself, and thank you for your service. And I mean it sincerely.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us, and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.